If you're part of the work-from-home labor force, might I suggest you look into Xfinity XFi Complete? Hey, friends, it's Mark Arum. For my friends and sponsors, the Mark Arum Show podcast, Xfinity XFi Complete, game changer. Their fastest speeds yet, now with up to 5 to 10 times faster upload speeds included. 5 to 10 times faster, so you can do your best work while you're at home. Information online at Xfinity.com. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit your local Xfinity store today. I'm assuming every single one of the 500,000 people listening right now are familiar with the Ten Commandments. I don't need to go through them line by line. You all know of the Ten Commandments. I learned them in Hebrew school. Maybe you learned them in Sunday school. Deborah, you learned them.
Yeah, in catechism.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you first found out about the Ten Commandments when the voice of God was given the tablets to Charlton Heston.
I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
We're all familiar with them, right? I don't need to go 1 through 10 on them. Now, they varied over the years. I'm assuming it was Aramaic that was on the tablets, the language that predated Hebrew, maybe. But they've been translated and tweaked. Anyway, they're in the news today. You heard it during Chris Chandler and Atlanta's Morning News. In Louisiana, the Louisiana governor signed into law that every single public classroom, kindergarten through college, now has to display the Ten Commandments in every classroom.
This is one of the bills that got the press over here.
It is?
I think so. This bill mandates the display of the Ten Commandments in every classroom in public, elementary, secondary, and post-education schools in the state of Louisiana. Because if you want to respect the rule of law, you got to start from the original lawgiver, which was Moses.
All right, listen. Moses is my dude. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but we're on the same family tree. He was a Jewish fella with a bad sense of direction. He wandered the desert for 40 years after those tablets were handed to him by the voice of God. He's Jewish. That was my Jewish God that gave Jewish Moses the Ten Commandments. I have a deeper appreciation, understanding, and feeling toward the Ten Commandments. Pretty good set of rules to live your life by. They're ours, right? We're happy to share them with our Christian friends and folks that want to abide by that voice of God that handed down the Ten Commandments. I have nothing wrong. I find no problem with the Ten Commandments. Not a thing. I was a young buck in Hebrew school. You shouldn't murder. Yeah, you should respect your parents. So no one listening now has more respect or belief in the Ten Commandments than yours truly. They're ours. It's us. We're the originators. We're the OGs when it comes to those tablets. You go to any synagogue, you'll see the tablets of the Ten Commandments. But that's where they belong. In a house of worship. That's a religious artifact. Those are religious teachings. Now, can non-religious folk respect the Ten Commandments and follow them without being religious, without believing in God? Most of them. Number one's probably not. Have no other God before me. But I'm stunned that Louisiana, the governor is like, we want this in every classroom on the wall. If the shoe was on the other foot, we're living in an alternative universe, and the governor of Louisiana is like, you know what? We're putting whatever Islamic artifact on every wall, or every student in the district gets a copy of the Quran and they have to bring it to class every day. People would be going absolutely nuts. Again, I'm a fan of the Ten Commandments. It's a pretty, God pretty much nailed it on the head. But number one is, I am the Lord thy God, they shall have no other gods before me. Now, if you are a Buddhist, a Sikh, a Hindu student, and you're in that classroom, and that's on the wall, That's just, that to me, that's not appropriate at all. You want to put something on the wall in every classroom, you put the Declaration of Independence. You put the Bill of Rights. You put the Constitution up there. Not the Ten Commandments. This is going to court, 100%. 100%. In fact, the Supreme Court's already weighed in on this. I think it was back in 1980 where they said, no, you can't do this. You can't put the Ten Commandments up in classrooms. And it sounded like the Louisiana governor, he wants this to go to court. Now, maybe he thinks with the new layout of the Supreme Court that there's a chance that the Alitos of the world, the Thomases of the world might be like, yeah, that's fine. It's okay. I have nothing, no problem with the Ten. They're my people's words. We're the conduit that got those things down off the mount. You know, they originated with us. Moses, one of our best Jews, I would go out and say. Him, Seinfeld, me, and Sandler. Jesus has got to be top five.
I'd put Jesus in the top five.
All right, Jesus top five. So, I get the importance. Now, the Louisiana governor is saying, well, it's not a religious thing. This is history. So, all right, so you want to teach the Ten Commandments in history. I actually have no problem with that. Because when I was in school, do you know what I learned about? Zeus and the sun god Ra. That's history, yeah. You know, the Greeks and the Romans, they had their god. I learned about that. The Egyptians had their gods. That if you want to teach the history of the Ten Commandments, go for it. I think that's great. Absolutely. And they're a great guideline to life. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't covet Longoria's blueberry patch or his wife. There's a lot of non-coveting in the
rose bushes.
You can covet those stupid rose bush. But this is wildly inappropriate to have, in my opinion, to have them on every single classroom. And I'm assuming, Deborah, I didn't do this. Louisiana is not exactly the beacon of light when it comes to education in the United States.
In the rank of 50 states, Louisiana actually comes in at number 47.
47.
So not so great.
All right, so Governor, you want to turn your attention to the classroom? Get more teachers. Hire better teachers. Pay them more. Spend more money on actually educating the kids, not by putting up Ten Commandments in every single classroom from kindergarten to college. You want to teach it in history? That's fine. I would even put up like golden rule. Put the golden rule on the wall. Do unto others. Like that's not a religious thing. That's just being a good person. And don't come at me on social media because, you know, I learned about the Ten Commandments before you did. And I can read them in another language too. And so could Deborah. Yeah,
in three languages.
In three languages. But it's not going to happen. The courts are going to, I'm guessing the lower courts will shoot this down. We'll see what the Supreme Court says. You know what? We'll see what legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum says about this. We had him scheduled to talk about the Supreme Court and their upcoming decisions, but I'm going to pick his brain about the governor of Louisiana mandating that the Ten Commandments hang in every classroom in the state. That's coming up next on the Mark Arum Show.
It's inconceivable that in the past few months, the administration has been withholding weapons and ammunition to Israel. Israel, America's closest ally.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, those comments causing waves in the administration of the Biden administration. They canceled a meeting with an Israeli delegation today. We'll update that story in the Israel-Hamas war coming up a little bit later on in the show. We are also going to be updating the Russian-North Korea story. Kim Jong-il hosted the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, and then Putin just went to Vietnam. And I don't know if you've seen the video of the reception that we've had there. It's unbelievable. Like, I was bashing Kim Jong-il for, you know, basically being the worst dictator in the world. But they know how to put on a reception. They know how to put on a show. It was the craziest, most orchestrated reception I've ever seen. They were traveling down the main drag in whatever North Korea city they were in, and the streets were lined with these North Koreans in these like traditional costumes, and they're waving North Korean flags and Russia. I mean, it was, you ever watch the Olympics, the synchronized swimming, and you go, how the hell did they do that?
Right, right.
I was watching this going, how the hell did they coordinate all that? It's unbelievable. Anyway, we'll update that. Also, Peter Greenberg's going to join us. He is the travel expert for CBS News. We're going to pick his brain about a couple of big travel stories. And we're going to talk to one of the founding members of the Atlanta Rhythm Section. Rodney Giusto is going to join us. I'm so excited about that. And I've requested Atlanta Rhythm Section music throughout the show today. I just want to, before we get to Thane Rosenbaum, I want to get you caught up to date on campaign 2024. President Biden heads to Camp David tonight, where he'll spend several days preparing for next week's debate with former President Trump. CBS's Linda Kenyon has the story.
The president will leave his home in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and head to the presidential retreat at Camp David, Maryland. He'll be traveling with staff, as well as his longtime advisor and his first White House chief of staff, Ron Klain, who will be deeply involved in the debate prep. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the president will continue to do his job, even as he is engaged in preparing for the June 27th debate in Atlanta, telling the media the president is president of the United States anywhere he goes, and that he can do both at the same time. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
And apparently, I didn't think he would do it, but President Trump is already starting his debate prep for that debate June 27th, which you'll hear live on 95.5 WSB. All right, joining us now live on the show, CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, good morning, my friend. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark. It's always great hearing your voice, buddy.
Moth, likewise, my friend. Before I originally had you on to talk about what we're waiting to hear from the Supreme Court, maybe today, but I want to start off with what the Louisiana governor said yesterday, mandating that the Ten Commandments be posted in every classroom from kindergarten through college. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the Supreme Court back in 1980 say this was a no-go?
Yeah, it's 50 years old. This thing, we thought we already resolved this thing. Well, look, first of all, he's not alone. Utah, Texas, I think might be Kentucky again, are already lining up in their state legislatures. Remember, a lot of the states are dominated by Republican legislatures. And so that you saw how that played out in the Dobbs decision, because they went to work very quickly to restrict abortion access or to eliminate the right to abortion altogether in many of these states. The minute the Dobbs opinion said it's up to state legislatures, the Republicans say legislatures, that's great, we'll make all these decisions. So they feel much more emboldened, the Republican legislatures, to challenge constitutional principles that, as you said, we thought we already had that established. Guess what? There are people who thought that Roe v. Wade was already established, right? So, you know, they're saying, well, if Roe v. Wade isn't sacrosanct, maybe neither is this. But they're making a slightly different argument, Mark. You may not buy it, but they're saying this. When we say we want the Ten Commandments in public schools or private schools where we're funding it through public dollars, we're referring to it as a historical document. We're really not talking about Christianity or Judaism. We're not talking about. We're saying that it's the basis of everyone's democracy, that these fundamental 10 rules are universal for all Western democracies that believe in a constitution. And in fact, we think you should also have the Mayflower Compact. Remember, that's what the Pilgrims signed.
Exactly.
They're saying, we love that. That was religious in nature, but it really wasn't. It was both religious because it was put together by pilgrims, but it had a secular purpose. And they're saying, I think it's called the Northwest Declaration. I think it's called the Northwest Declaration, which sort of established the rights of states in the West to become states. So they're playing fast and loose. They're saying, we think a lot of these documents have secular implications. And yeah, of course, Moses is the author, or he's the one that carried the Ten Commandments. But we look at Moses as a senator. We think of Moses like the author of legislation. We're not talking about him as a Jewish prophet or prophet for, frankly, I think he's also a prophet for Islam, I think. So that's where they're playing with. They're saying, you're misreading us. We're not making anyone uncomfortable. They don't have to be Christians. They just have to recognize that that's where all of our laws derive from.
But using the same logic thing, you could say the Quran is then a historical document or a number of religious texts. I mean, I have no problem with teaching religious history in school. I learned about the Greek and Roman gods and the Egyptian gods in school, but there was not a picture of Ra, the sun god, on my third grade classroom wall.
Yeah, true. Look, we saw this before. The difference is that it usually came up where you would see the Ten Commandments when you walked into a courthouse.
Yeah.
Right. Or some other government building. And you're going, what is that? Why is that here? So they're saying it's precisely because of what little Mark Arum learned about Greek history, that it's about school.
Yeah.
It's really not about making a statement that we're Christian. We're saying, no, we think that Mark, when he was little, he learned that stuff and it was important for him to know it. And we don't think he can fundamentally understand what Thomas Jefferson was talking about in the Declaration of Independence unless he understood that the founding fathers were Christians. They were trained as Christians. They knew texts, biblical texts, and it informed all of our governing documents.
Is it, gosh, Thane, I hate to do this to you. I'm sure you have a fantastic breakfast plan ahead of you, but can you hang out for a couple more minutes after the news? Because
yeah.
I have a follow-up question to what's going on in Louisiana, but I also want to talk to you about what's going on with the Supreme Court.
I only have under one condition, Mark.
Yes, sir.
That your listeners know that I would only do this for Mark Arum.
Wow. Pull that cut, Longoria. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to be right. I'll make sure Judd does a quick newscast too, Thane. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News legal analyst, going to join us for a second segment. All Atlanta Rhythm Section music today. Rodney Giusto is going to join us a little bit later on in the program. Deborah's got some tickets to give away, and we'll update that cell phone ban. We talked it at length about yesterday here in Marietta and Los Angeles. Social media is active, at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. Hey. 9:37 on an extremely busy Newsday Thursday. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. All eyes on the nation's highest court. Continuing our conversation with CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, is today the day we hear from the Supremes regarding presidential immunity?
Well, Mark, let me just start off by saying that the Supreme Court is running really late this year. By this time, in the last few years when you and I were talking, I probably unloaded for you half a dozen to a dozen cases of important ones. And we've only had a couple. So we're running late. And by the way, they've also heard half the number of arguments that they normally hear. It was a light year. Normally it's like 125 cases. This was like 65 over the year. Remember, 7,000 petitions are given to the Supreme Court. They only take 100, 150. This year, they only heard 65. So that just gives you a little background. You might say, well, if that's true, why are they taking so long to unload the cases if they're only argued, they only heard half the ones they normally hear? I don't have the answer to that. The only thing I can tell you is that they don't seem to like each other anymore. There's been a lot of public discussion about a lot of sniping. You know, they never loved each other historically, but they were more collegial, and they're less collegial. So this thing about presidential immunity, as you can imagine, on ideological grounds, is probably really have been ticking them off. So their clerks are probably fighting with each other. They are sniping it with each other. I think that this is going to be the first out of the chute. I do think that when we finally see one, I think, which is today, they're expecting, good, they could release five today, for all I know. But, you know, they're supposed to release one. I can't believe they would wait on immunity until right before July 4th when they leave for the summer.
Yeah,
I think they're.
It's been over 110 days, Thane, right? They've had
exactly.
This. Yeah, that's a
exactly.
Long time.
There have been people that are saying, you got to be kidding. How could you wait this long? Why didn't you just put this one on the top of your desk. It doesn't have to be June. You could have said, told us in April, after, not long after the argument. So I just think that there's a lot of, you know, expectation and criticism. So I think that this is the one that we'll see today, but I'm often wrong.
All right. If it happens before noon, keep your phone handy because we're going to buzz you back.
All right.
CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum's on Twitter, at Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, as always, we appreciate your time. Let's continue our team coverage of the story we started the show off with. Louisiana, the governor of Louisiana, mandating that the Ten Commandments be posted in every single public school classroom from kindergarten through college. Continue our team coverage. It's attorney Andrew Seidel. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Saw you post an amazing thread on Twitter, now X, talking about this Louisiana case. I'm not a lawyer, but I was pretty sure that this was already settled by the Supreme Court back in 1980 in Stone versus Graham. What's the deal with the Louisiana governor? Does he say the new layout of the Supreme Court and said now this is a chance to get this reversed from the Supreme Court?
I think that's part of it. We're seeing a wave of Christian nationalism crest over this country, and it's especially taking shape in the courts. I mean, but this law is a transparent attempt to pressure public school students to convert to the governor's preferred brand of Christianity, right? I mean, the Ten Commandments are a religious law. They begin, "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me." That's what they are trying to impose on every single kid, regardless of their religion, in the state of Louisiana. It's wrong and it's unconstitutional.
That being said, with the conservative majority in the Supreme Court, we saw it with Roe versus Wade. Is there a chance that this gets up to the Supreme Court and the conservative justices say, all right, you know what, Louisiana, we buy your argument. Go ahead and put them up.
Americans United for Separation of Church and State, the organization I work for, is determined to take this to court, and we feel like there's a good chance that we will be vindicated. We announced our lawsuit alongside the ACLU and some of our other allies. As you mentioned at the top, this has been settled since 1980, and while there have been cases that have, you know, maybe allowed the Ten Commandments here and there, never in public schools have we seen that, right? I mean, this is an effort to use the machinery of the state to impose one particular brand of religion on students. And honestly, this should be something that concerns everybody because the state of Louisiana here rewrote the Bible. They came up with their own version of the Ten Commandments. They edited the Ten Commandments out of Exodus 20 and rewrote them in a way that they thought was better. I mean, this is the law that violates the religious freedom of every single student, every single family, every single Louisianan.
Well, I mentioned that at the top of the show, too. You know, the Ten Commandments, as they were handed down from God to Moses in the 5,000 years whence they've been translated, retranslated, adjusted, nudged. I mean, I believe the original text was Aramaic.
Put it mildly.
Yeah. So you're saying that Louisiana's actually jiggered them a little bit more in this?
Pretty significantly, actually. Yeah, I mean, if you look at any given Bible, there are actually four sets of Ten Commandments: Exodus 20, Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 5, and Deuteronomy 27. Right? There's no standard version of the Ten Commandments. We kind of, in the American psyche, we sort of the movie, right, of Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments. But that's not the textual reality of the Bible. And as you mentioned, different Bibles translate them differently. Does it prohibit killing or murder? Does it prohibit graven images or during the 8th and 9th centuries, something called the iconoclast controversy? And the point is that we should not have the government weighing in on religious controversies. We should not have the government disclose violation of religious freedom and the separation of church and state.
Attorney Andrew Seidel joining us live on the Mark Arum Show. Do you buy the Louisiana governor's argument that we are not teaching this as a religious set of commandments, but in a historical manner? Like these were passed down through history. It led to the founding fathers coming up with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, that this is a historical document, not a religious document.
Yeah, that's nonsense. I mean, I actually wrote a whole book on this. It's called The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. We have all of the records from the Constitutional Convention. We know what documents, what laws, what precedent the Founding Fathers were citing when they were crafting our Constitution. You know how many times they cited the Ten Commandments?
Zero.
Never. Not once. Never. Yes. This is a clear attempt. This is Christian nationalism. This is an attempt to impose this conservative brand of Christianity on everybody. And we know that because the law's sponsor, Representative Dodie Horton, she admitted this when she was passing the bill. She said, this is a quote, "I'm not concerned with an atheist. I'm not concerned with a Muslim. I'm concerned with our children looking and seeing what God's law is." Right? And it's right there in those first lines. "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me." Which, by the way, it would be hard to write a statement that is more at odds and runs more contrary to America's founding principles than that, right? We are founded on religious freedom. You can have one God, no God, any God, all the gods if you want. That's what it is to be an American.
Interesting. Andrew, if you take out, yeah, I'm just looking at the Ten Commandments in general, just from memory. If you take out, "You shall have no other God before me, don't take the Lord's name in vain," and you leave the other stuff, "Don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal," an amended version where God is taken out of the Ten Commandments, would that be acceptable to be posted? Just like guidelines for life, kids.
This is a religious law, and that's part of the problem. And in fact, the Supreme Court said that when they were first looking at this stuff. All of this is based on the authority of God, which, you know, let me get, again, contrast with the Constitution, which is based on the authority of we the people. And of course, some of the rules overlap, right? Every successful society that we know of has come up with the rule, don't kill other people, don't steal from other people, right? This is not something that is unique or original to the Ten Commandments. So there is something of a problem of claiming these universal human principles for one particular brand of religion too. And there's actually some other kind of really fun and interesting textual reasons that I won't get into here, but I will say if you want to learn more about that, definitely check out the founding myth.
Gotcha. Final question. As an attorney, Andrew, any forecasts, predictions on what's going to happen in the court system?
Oh, well, we'll see Governor Landry in court. We are Americans United is fighting for true religious freedom, for the religious freedom of all public school families in Louisiana. And I'm feeling pretty confident about this one.
There you go. Andrew Seidel on Twitter, Andrew L. Seidel. Andrew, appreciate you jumping on short notice, my friend.
Thank you so much, Mark. It was a pleasure.
There you go. Obviously, a lot of people have strong opinions on this. We'll continue to monitor it. If Louisiana was ranked first in the nation education, I might cut them some slack. 47th, dude. 47th. Got to relax. So much to talk about. Peter Greenberg from CBS News is going to join us. He's their travel expert. And you're hearing right now, Atlanta Rhythm Section, Rodney Giusto, founding member, going to join us on the program as well. Coming up at 10:35, Peter Greenberg, travel expert from CBS, is going to join us. I, as you know, Deborah, am not a travel expert, but I'm going to give my expertise. If you're an American citizen listening right now, don't go to Russia. A Russian-American woman's gone on trial in Russia, charged with treason for showing her support for Ukraine.
Ksenia Karolina was born in Russia but immigrated to the U.S. over a decade ago. She was in Russia visiting family earlier this year when she was arrested. She's charged with raising money to send to the Ukrainian army and faces 12 years to life in prison if found guilty of treason. She's one of at least a dozen Americans jailed in Russia.
Listen, I would love to go to Russia. The architecture, the food, the vodka, the caviar, the culture, I mean, it's fantastic. We've missed our window. If you haven't been to Russia yet as an American, you're done. You missed it. You should have gone. I should have gone. No, don't go there now. Don't go there. The journalist is still, behind bars there, claiming that he's part of the CIA. This lady just showed support for Ukraine and faces life in prison.
And she's technically Russian.
Yeah. So I'm not a travel expert, but I'm a travel expert on this. Don't go. Speaking of Putin, he's now in Vietnam. Will Ripley's in Vietnam updating it.
Been a long goodbye in Pyongyang, but it was a cautious and quick hello here in Hanoi. Vietnam trying its best to host President Putin for a relatively toned down but friendly state visit without alienating the U.S. and allies. Kim Jong-un, on the other hand, welcoming Putin in signature North Korean style. By the time Vladimir Putin's plane landed in North Korea, it was 3 a.m. Wednesday, hours behind schedule. Kim Jong-un was at the airport waiting, greeting the Russian president with handshakes, hugs, smiles. Driving together in one of two Russian limousines Putin gave Kim as a gift past Pyongyang skyscrapers, lit up to welcome the Russian leader in a nation plagued by power shortages. They toured Kim's lavish guest house where Putin spent the night. Waking up to the sound of huge crowds lining the streets of Pyongyang, chanting "Welcome Putin" in almost perfect unison. Rolling through Pyongyang, riding past streets packed with people waving Russian and North Korean flags as far as the eye could see. Most of these people don't know the brutal reality of Putin's war in Ukraine or the claim Pyongyang denies that huge amounts of North Korean weapons and ammo are flowing into Russia. Cut off from the outside world, North Koreans only know what their government wants them to know, that Putin is Kim's new best friend.
DPRK expresses full support and solidarity with the struggles of the Russian government.
We highly appreciate your consistent and unwavering support.
North Korea and Russia reviving a defense treaty from the Cold War, agreeing to help each other if attacked. The strongest military pact between the two nations in decades. Putin also says Russia doesn't rule out developing military technical cooperation. Raising fears around the world, Putin might help Kim make his missiles more accurate in exchange for a continued steady supply of weapons and ammo for Putin's war on Ukraine.
Now, there's been reports of, I mentioned yesterday that it's a papier-mâché military, North Korea. There are reports that North Korea has supplied an extremely huge amount of ammunition to Russia. I find that extremely unlikely, extremely unlikely. But the fact that Russia, with this new cooperation agreement with North Korea, could help them with their missile technology, that is actually something to worry about. If you haven't seen the video, go search for the video of Putin and Kim Jong-un meeting. Like Kim Jong-un, how tall do you think Kim Jong-un is, Longoria?
4 foot.
Tiny, right? Yeah, a little guy. He's taller than Putin.
What?
Yeah.
Is he really?
He is. Putin must be.
You think he had like extenders on his
shoes? Oh, maybe. Maybe. But Putin looked like he was shorter than Kim Jong-un, which I thought was stark. I mean, I didn't think Putin was 6'6", but I thought he was taller than the North Korean leader. Anyway, we'll continue
Putin's
to monitor
5'7".
That. Yeah, lies. No way. Then Kim Jong-il is 5'9". Kim Jong-un. All right, news, weather, traffic 2 minutes away. When we come back, we're going to update that cell phone ban, both locally here in Marietta and out in L.A. That's next on the Mark Arum Show. To the show and a good Thursday morning to you. Mark Arum here, you there, 10:05, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is the Mark Arum Show, live Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon on 95.5 WSB. Whole family with us today. Deborah Green, the executive producer of the show. Longoria, the stoic Eskimo on the other side of the takeout window. Sweet Pea Purnell screens your calls 30 minutes from now. Travel expert Peter Greenberg is going to join us live later on the show. We're going to talk to a founding member of Atlanta Rhythm Section, Rodney Giusto. We are monitoring the Supreme Court, the breaking news banner right now across the cable networks. Any moment, the Supreme Court expected to release opinions. Maybe one of those opinions that is released is about presidential immunity. As soon as we get word from the Supreme Court, we'll bring it to you live here on 95.5 WSB. If you missed yesterday's show, we went in depth on Marietta City Schools deciding to ban smartphones for all middle schoolers. Grant Rivera, the superintendent of Marietta Schools.
If there is a medical reason why a child needs to check their cell phone, they're not doing that in class. They will do that in a separate place with a caring adult who can accommodate whatever their need may be.
Not only is this ban going to happen in Marietta City Schools, but also in one of the largest school districts in the nation, Los Angeles, California. Joining us on that part of the story from ABC News, it's Brad Garrett. Brad, what has there been the reaction been like in L.A. to their system-wide cell phone ban for all schools?
Well, I think to a certain extent, the reaction by parents are mixed, because I think obviously phones allow parents to get a hold of their kids immediately. I think the trade-off here is obviously, why do they need a phone if they're in the confines of a school? And the reality is they don't. And many studies by social psychologists and others have clearly suggested that phones in particular in school, you know, they're a distraction. And the more kids are on phones, the more that their brains are getting rewired to sort of being addicted to the phone. And it's if you look also at studies starting in the 2010s when smartphones came out, you see this steady decline in the number or increase in the number of kids that have depression issues, that have anxiety issues. And because of this rewiring, the belief is that it's really making them less empathetic and less able to concentrate, because all of these dopamine hits of this visual stuff they're seeing on their phones or tablets all the time, they're not going to go away, obviously, but I think the key is you have to reduce the amount of time they spend on phones and tablets.
Interesting. Now, I just assumed that because they are so addictive, right? I mean, I'm an adult and I'm addicted to my smartphone, that it was more than the social aspect of it and what that study said. It's just a distraction in the classroom. If the student is on their phone looking at their phone, they're not listening to the teacher and the teacher can't perform the lesson plan. To me, that seems like a bigger issue when it comes to education.
Well, certainly as far as education, just as important as the issue is that the more time they spend on those phones, as I mentioned earlier, it's also rewiring your brains. You know, children and adolescents, you know, our brains are very vulnerable because they're still developing. And that these studies certainly suggest that the bombardment of what comes through social media, many times via your phone, is really having harmful effects on kids that are going to take them into, you know, adulthood with certain sort of disabilities, in effect, that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I mean, the other big part of this is that by spending more time on phones and tablets, kids aren't doing, they're doing less stuff in person. And that's where you learn how to deal with people. So there's this built-in fragility that's apparently occurring in kids that spend too much time because they don't have to deal with people, right? You can say and do almost anything you want on social media. If you have to do it in person, you may get beat up, and you're going to have to deal with saying these hateful things, you know, without your phone or your tablet. So it's all of this combined that makes it, in my view, and the people who study this stuff's view, is that you've got to limit phones and tablets, and the parents in particular have to be the sheriff here.
Brad Garrett, ABC News on the Mark Arum Show. Mixed reaction from the parents. What about the teachers? Have we heard from the teachers' unions in L.A. County? What do they think about the ban?
I can just tell you, in conversations with the teachers in my son's school, I mean, they don't think phones should be anywhere near school, you know, or bring them to school, which is typically what happens. You go to school, and then you lock them up. They're placed in lockers, and you don't get them until school ends, whenever that is. So I think the school, the teachers, I would assume, would be generally supportive of this.
You know, considering L.A. is such a massive school district, and we saw it here locally, right, in Marietta, Georgia, do we think this is going to start a trend? We're going to see more of these bans nationwide?
Yeah. I mean, I've been on the radio for the last hour plus, and at least two stations have talked about their jurisdictions. The school districts have come up with a ban of cell phones during school hours.
Is there a chance we see a parent or a set of parents so against this that they take to litigation to try to negate these cell phone bans?
Well, it shouldn't surprise either one of us, because it's sort of the common route to go when you don't agree with something today, is to go after it to the court system. So that wouldn't surprise me.
All right, we're going to continue to follow the story in the show. Brad Garrett, ABC News. Brad, thanks for your time.
Anytime. Take care.
I'm curious to see if we're going to see other jurisdictions in the metro area follow suit with Marietta. All right, we're monitoring the Supreme Court. I just got this push alert. Supreme Court has upheld a Trump-era tax on overseas investments, rejecting an argument from a Washington state couple in a case that could have jeopardized existing tax provisions and torpedoed Democratic talk of a wealth tax. I have no idea what the heck that means. CNN is discussing what I believe what the Supreme Court, their first decision today, was just handed down.
Thomas loses, he might be in dissent, and Barrett will be with the Chief Justice. Now, I was an idiot because I just made a public prediction, and I could look like a total fool.
So that's a former clerk for the Supreme Court talking right now with Jim Acosta on CNN.
Please stand by.
Yeah, stand by, please, because so I can't make heads or tails of that. Supreme Court today upheld a Trump-era tax on overseas investment, rejecting an argument from a Washington state couple in a case that could have jeopardized existing tax provisions and torpedoed Democratic talk of a wealth tax. I have no idea what that means. But we're starting to hear decisions from the Supreme Court. Will we hear the big one today about presidential immunity? Let's go up to Capitol Hill right now. This is Sunland Safardi.
Calling him out and asking him very directly, essentially, what steps, what exactly are you doing to investigate these growing ethics scandals that are plaguing these two justices that are sitting on the Supreme Court? They note that
Roberts. All right, so Sunland's talking about a Democratic congressman asking Chief Justice Roberts what he's going to do about oversight with, you know, the trips that Thomas took and Alito's flag thing. So that has nothing to do with what the Supreme Court's going to do. All right, they wrote a letter to Chief Justice John Roberts. So that has nothing to do with what's going on with today on the Supreme Court decision. But the first decision has been handed down today by the Supreme Court. Will we hear more decisions? And will we hear about the big one, the presidential immunity? We'll continue our team coverage next on the Mark Arum Show.
Conceivable that in the past few months, the administration has been withholding weapons and ammunition to Israel. Israel, America's closest ally.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu raising eyebrows in D.C. with those comments. In fact, the Biden administration canceled the scheduled visit from an Israeli delegation today. We will update the Israel-Hamas war next hour here on the Mark Arum Show. We are continuing to monitor the Supreme Court of the United States. Two decisions have been handed down so far, Deborah. The first one, which I mentioned, was taxes overseas. I don't understand what it is about, but I don't invest overseas. So
offshore bank accounts is what I'm guessing.
But it was 7-2. Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh, read the whatever. Gorsuch and Thomas dissent, which is interesting, but it was 7-2 with Gorsuch and Thomas dissenting. Mandatory repatriation tax does not exceed congressional's authority. I have no idea what that means. Zero. The second one that came down, I can't believe the cases they're choosing, by the way. It's a Fourth Amendment case claiming malicious prosecution between a jeweler, like someone that owns a jewelry store, and the city of Napoleon. I have no idea what this case is about. The presence of probable cause for one charge in a criminal proceeding does not categorically defeat a Fourth Amendment malicious prosecution claim. That was 6-3 with Kagan giving the ruling. I don't know who dissented on that. We also know we are not going to hear from Justices Barrett or Jackson today, so we won't hear from them. There might be two more cases we hear from today. That's what my sources at the Supreme Court are saying. There still might be two more. Hopefully one of those two will be the big one. The big one that we're waiting on is presidential immunity. So I have no idea. Oh, wait, another one just popped. Diaz versus the United States. 6-3, Justice Thomas given the ruling there. Expert testimony that most people in a group have a particular mental state is not an opinion about the defendant and thus does not violate FRE rule 704B. I have no idea what that one is either. But there we go. So maybe one more. We might have one more. We're going to monitor that situation. We'll see. Thursday's their day. For whatever reason, Supreme Court justices, Thursday's their day to drop the stuff. I guess they take Friday off. Or they telecommute on Fridays?
Well, they went ahead yesterday off for the holidays.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So anyway, maybe one more case. If that is the case, we'll bring it to you live here. This is a crazy story. I've gotten caught with this, not in like a bad respect, though, I was checking email on someone's laptop, and I thought it was like my old Hotmail or Yahoo account or something, and I forgot to log off. Apparently, I just clicked the thing.
You pulled a Shelly and left it logged
and
in
and left
here.
It logged on someone else's laptop, so they had access to my email. It reminded me of the story you had you pulled this morning, Deborah. A man is suing Apple, the company Apple, because of what?
Because of some messages he thought he deleted, but they weren't actually deleted. Now, this actually came up a couple weeks ago when Apple did an update. All of a sudden, all these old photos and messages that you thought you deleted from your mail account,
yes,
your phone, you know, whatever they were, you thought they deleted, but when they did this update, they magically appeared again. So one of the good things about Apple is if you have a tablet, a phone, a watch, a laptop, and they all sync together, so I don't need to go on one device to get it on another one. They're all just available together. Well, the problem is this guy deleted pictures off his phone that were slightly incriminating, but because he shared a laptop with his wife, she was able to find weren't deleted off all of the devices,
now, these
just the one in his hand.
Incriminating photos or texts or conversations were with a sex worker.
Yes, a sex worker. Ended up leading to a divorce.
Yeah, so the husband had was paying someone for, I don't know if it was just digital relationship or actual physical relationship, but he thought he deleted all these messages, like, all right, yeah, I'm covering my tracks. But they were still showing up on the laptop that he shared with his wife. She discovered them. They divorced, and now he's suing Apple for...
Now he's suing Apple, saying that, you know, when I thought it was deleted. I didn't realize it was just deleted on one device. I thought it was deleted on all my accounts. So he's trying to sue Apple, saying it's, you know, what they're stating isn't real. So,
Get Thane Rosenbaum back on and see what he says. I don't know if that's going to... I mean... Don't cheat.
£5 million, so it's a little over $5 million,
yeah,
plus the divorce and legal costs.
Just don't cheat, and you don't have to worry about deleting evidence. I didn't mean to look at you when I said that, Longoria.
Yeah.
Or Deborah. Or Sweet Pea. Just don't cheat. You don't have anything to worry about. Deborah Green, what do you think you have to make per year to be the top 1% of income earners in the United States? Top 1%.
In the United States?
In the United States, to be rich, that top 1%, what do you need to make annually? What's the number?
$1.5
million.
Yeah.
You going higher or lower, Longoria?
Going higher.
Going higher. You're both wrong.
The IRS says the top 1% of earners earn just over $540,000. Top 1%, that seems rich. It means you're earning about $45,000 a month. The IRS says $336,000 puts you in the top 5%. Most of us are someplace else. The real median household income in the U.S. is around $75,000. That's according to the Census Bureau. Michael Toscano, CBS News.
So not $1.5 million, not higher, $540,000. Longoria just found out he is in the top 1%.
Leslie is in the top 1%.
Congratulations, man.
Leslie's in it.
That's
Andrew
amazing.
And I are in the bottom 1%.
Yeah. So if you're listening now and you're making $540K a year, I tip my hat to you. That's top 1%. And $336,000 puts you in the top 5%. Good on you, Leslie Longoria, and anyone else listening that hits that mark. Now, back when I started WSB Radio, there were a number of people in this building that were hitting that number.
Oh, those
and that was back 25
radio
years
days,
ago.
Yeah.
That's we were just born too late, Deborah, for the life we chose.
Also, Justin Timberlake's fault. After that is when all of radio changed.
Oh, was that it?
Right? Yes, Nipplegate. That was Justin Timberlake's fault.
I do have an update on Timberlake. Do I have time to play it here, Longoria? I know you guys care about Justin Timberlake. Bryn Gingrass has an update in New York.
Yeah, John, nothing yet from Justin Timberlake, that's for sure. No comment from him, his reps, and not even from his attorney, who he appeared in court just this time yesterday morning with that local attorney. What we do know, though, is what we're learning from the court documents that were released after that court date. And it details a lot of what police say happened during that DWI stop. What they say is that Justin Timberlake was at a hotel just down the street from where we are here in Sag Harbor, leaving there at about 12:30 in the morning. Police say that he blew through a stop sign, and then he was seen about swerving through lanes for about six blocks or so before they eventually pulled him over. And according to the police officer who wore body camera footage, they said during that stop, they noticed that Justin Timberlake was slurring his speech, was talking a little bit slow.
Yeah, I want to see that body cam footage when it gets released. Meanwhile, Britney Spears is loving this. And Janet Jackson fans are loving it. I didn't know they didn't like JT.
He's the one that got her in trouble.
I guess. Nipplegate. Deborah said it first, so it must be okay. News, weather, and traffic 3 minutes away. When we come back, we're going to pick the brain of travel expert Peter Greenberg, only here on The Mark Arum Show.
The Mark Arum Show is performed before a live studio audience.
All right, getting word from the Supreme Court. The final decision handed down was Gonzalez versus Trevino. I wonder if that's Lee Trevino. No blockbusters today. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. we'll have more, followed by a minimum of 3 or 4 days at minimum next week. It looks like, though, the Supreme Court decisions could bleed over till July. We'll continue to monitor the Supreme Court and give you a reaction to what decisions were handed down today throughout the day on 95.5 WSB. But let's take off. Let's travel. Let's travel the globe with travel expert from CBS News, Peter Greenberg. Peter, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Mark.
So I mentioned earlier, I am not a travel expert, but I did offer advice for the Atlantans listening to not travel to Russia. An American citizen just arrested in Russia for showing support to Ukraine. Back me up on this, Peter. We shouldn't be going to Russia right now, probably.
That's a definite no. You know, the bottom line is if you can't be in control and you don't know who's in control, either one of those two choices, don't go.
Are there any other countries that are on the Peter Greenberg don't fly list right now?
There are. In fact, let's go back to that metric. I will go anywhere in the world as long as I know who's in control and I'm not being threatened. So would I go to North Korea right now? Actually, I would, because I know who's in control and I can play by the rules. Same thing for Iran. And I'm not suggesting everybody should go. I'm just saying that's not on my don't fly list. Here's my don't fly list right now. Syria, Yemen, parts of Ukraine, of course, Russia, parts of Chechnya, parts of Somalia. And now I'm running out of choices. I think of 196 countries, there are only about 10 places I would not go.
Interesting. So you would can an American citizen go to North Korea? What's that like?
Believe it or not, there are organized tours. They're highly structured. They're highly restricted. But you fly in from China. I've been twice. You know, you're escorted everywhere you want to go, so that you don't have a lot of freedom to explore on your own. But the point is, if you want to go, they usually do it in conjunction with many of their sports activities, what they call their mass games, and you can go.
So you've been to North Korea twice.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was that experience like?
Well, you know, you're given a sort of an escort, a guide, mm-hmm. a guard, who basically restricts where you can go and what you can do. You're not free to just take your iPhone out and take pictures all the time. They're giving you sort of a tour of a showplace village that is certainly not representative of the way most North Koreans live. But you know what? Given the choice of being able to see it or not, I made that choice, and not a problem. But again, if you want to go, you can go.
Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is because we've been covering the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin's state visit to North Korea and the pomp and circumstance there. Just as a normal American tourist, any big takeaways from your two experiences there?
Well, yeah. The one thing that's going to actually save North Korea in the end is going to be travel and tourism. When you think about this, name one product North Korea makes that the world consumes in volume. The answer is nothing, unless you're in the market for unreliable Scud missiles. So you take a look at their economy. He has difficulty feeding his own people.
Yeah.
And I can tell you for a fact that he's in private negotiations now with the Spanish, with the Swiss, and with the Germans to try to build up his travel infrastructure, because he realizes that's his economic ticket out of his current malaise.
That's so interesting. I'm amazed. Peter Greenberg joining us live on the Mark Arum Show, talking travel. Yesterday on the show, we updated the Boeing CEO in front of Congress, apologizing for the two fatal crashes. And Boeing's under a lot of stress right now, the company, the CEO. And I was worried because, you know, Atlanta is such a big hub and there's so many folks in the aviation business that are in the metro Atlanta area and so many folks that just travel. What are the long term possible implications for Boeing's woes on the airline industry?
Well, this story is not going to go away anytime soon. The apology yesterday was certainly not enough. The continuing hearings will not just focus on Boeing, but of course their relationship with the FAA. That's the key issue here. But remember, Boeing is America's largest export company. It has huge contracts with the American government and military. Boeing's not going anywhere anytime soon, but it has to be restructured simply because their safety culture is not where it needs to be and where it has to be. And its relationship with the FAA has to be completely redistributed, because what it's doing now is the FAA has even admitted as recently as last week that their relationship with Boeing has been too hands off. It's more than just hands off. They let Boeing do a lot of things they never should allow them to do because the FAA didn't have the budget for the inspectors, for the independent work that a regulatory agency needs to do. So that's what's going to happen over the next 6 months to 2 years. And in the meantime, Boeing will still be financially crippled simply because they can't move that assembly line forward until proper inspections are done by independent inspectors and not by Boeing employees.
Now, 145,000 employees internationally for Boeing. And we had reporting yesterday that they had zero orders for jets, for passenger jets last month. No one ordered a single jet from Boeing, which doesn't usually happen.
True. I mean, their order book is questionable at this point, but their delivery dates are questionable. Right now, you're going to see a lot of financial claims filed against Boeing by airlines claiming loss of income because they never got their planes delivered on time, which means they've had to readjust their entire summer flying schedule right now. That means a lot of flights will be consolidated. Some routes will be canceled. If you want to know why your airplanes are all full, one of the reasons is because Boeing didn't make their delivery promises.
Summer travel season here, Peter, and I saw this headline, thought of you. Why do airlines overbook flights, and what happens if you are offloaded on one of those flights?
Well, airlines have been doing projections for years to figure out what their no-show factor is, because they know an unsold seat is revenue they'll never get. So some airlines will actually overbook as much as 30% on some flights, especially if they're heavily traveled business flights, since business travelers tend to cancel more than leisure travelers do. So that's going to be with us for a while. However, if you are on a flight that is overbooked and you're already in your seat and they ask for
plane. I'm sorry, Peter, you broke up a little bit. If you are on an overbooked flight and you get asked to depart or not take off, what happens then?
Well, if you're on the plane, then it gets into an auction where they basically offer a voucher or a flight credit. And if nobody stands up to take it, that amount doubles or triples. I was on a flight once where it got up to about $4,000 after, you know what, I could miss this flight.
Yeah.
And as I stood to stand up, I was trampled. Everybody else had the same idea. So there is a sliding scale there of compensation if you're denied boarding.
All right. I've been waiting for that to happen. I've never been offered an exorbitant amount of money to give up my flight. Some flights I can't do it. I just have to be somewhere. But there are other flights where I have some flexibility, and I wouldn't mind $4,000 to give up my seat.
Yeah, not a bad deal if you can get it, but you can't plan for it.
There you go. Peter Greenberg, CBS News travel expert. Peter, so good to have you on the show, buddy. Thank you for your time.
Hey, anytime, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
There you go. Peter Green. He's been to North Korea twice, Deborah.
That's crazy. I wouldn't even consider going there.
I would go with Peter.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'd defect there.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not defecting. But if he says it's okay, I'd go on a guided tour with Peter. All right. When we come back, let's go back overseas. What our intelligence agencies think China wants to happen in the presidential election. Like, who's China rooting for come November? We'll update that story live with Peter Martin from Bloomberg News next on The Mark Arum Show. Coming up next hour on the show, we got some new presidential poll numbers just in. We'll see what the numbers say, Biden v. Trump. Speaking of the presidential election, joining us live from Bloomberg News, global defense and intelligence correspondent Peter Martin. Peter, obviously, globally, this is a very important election. China especially going to be focused on who wins. What do the intelligence agencies think? Who's China rooting for when it comes to the big presidential election in November?
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me. You know, it's interesting. China has dealt with both of these candidates now. Under Donald Trump, there was a trade war, and by the end of his presidency, we were talking about a new Cold War between the U.S. and China. And then under President Biden, relations have been pretty rocky, too. And so U.S. intelligence agencies really feel like Beijing has no clear preference between the two candidates. They think relations are going to continue to get worse no matter who wins in November.
Interesting. So I would imagine that the same can't be said for Russia, right? I would imagine Vladimir Putin is rooting for a certain candidate in November. But when it comes to China, they have no warm feelings one way or another, whether it's Biden or Trump.
That's right. I don't think that the intelligence agencies have issued an official finding on Russia yet, but certainly in previous years, they have assessed that the Russian government would prefer President Trump. I think we'll have to wait to see what they say this time around. But with China, for sure, I don't think that they see much upside either way. You know, under President Biden, they've seen the U.S. Strengthen partnerships with countries surrounding China, so India, the Philippines, Japan, and others. And that really makes China kind of feel boxed in. Under President Trump, there might be a little bit less working with allies, but there'd probably be a big focus on tariffs, pushing back against Beijing's industrial policy, a whole slew of actions that China would find very objectionable.
And Peter, this information coming from U.S. spies in China, in Asia, or just analysts, where is this information coming from?
Yeah, so this is the view of the U.S. intelligence community. So that's 18 agencies spread across the federal government, made up of the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and others. So this is kind of the view pulling from all of those sources that they work on, and that would certainly include activities inside China itself generally.
So if this intelligence is to be believed, Peter, and I don't doubt it for sure, right? Our spies know what they're doing. And China really doesn't have a favored candidate come November. Does this mean we don't have to worry about any Chinese meddling in our election, be it AI or social media? Does this mean China's just going to be like, all right, whatever happens, happens, and we'll just play the hand we're dealt?
Well, you know, Secretary Blinken has said that the U.S. is tracking some Chinese efforts to influence the election. But I attended a briefing with officers from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. So that's like the organization that oversees all the U.S. intelligence agencies. And they told me and other reporters that so far, Beijing has been pretty conservative in the way that it's approached the election. They saw the blowback that Russia received after its alleged interference in previous U.S. elections, and they don't want that same anger and blowback directed towards Beijing. So far, they've been pretty cautious, but I know that U.S. officials will continue to watch it closely and monitor any signs of Chinese interference.
Peter Martins, the global defense and intelligence correspondent for Bloomberg News. I'd be negligent, Peter, if I didn't ask you this question while we had you on the show. On the heels of the Putin visit to North Korea and Vietnam, how closely should we be paying attention to these alliances, especially that alliance that Russia has re-upped with North Korea?
I think very, very closely. You know, there are global events right now which are pushing China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and others into, you know, they've always been friendly, but into much closer kind of alliances of convenience than we've ever seen before. You know, there are a lot of differences between those countries, but the U.S. is worried about all of them. And so any sign of closening ties, especially, you know, the kind of military cooperation that we've seen between North Korea and Russia, is very, very worrying for U.S. interests, especially at a time when the U.S. is trying to assist Ukraine in a war with Russia, when it's trying to manage a unprecedented crisis in the Middle East, and of course keeps a close eye on China with Taiwan as well. Any extra malign actors in there are just going to add extra headaches for U.S. policymakers.
Yeah, no doubt. Final question for you, Peter. Go to Vietnam. Is there going to be U.S. pushback to the Vietnamese government for hosting Putin on this visit?
You know, I think it's fair to say it's the kind of development the U.S. wouldn't be pleased about, but As you and all of your listeners will remember, the U.S. and Vietnam themselves have a very rocky relationship historically. And so the two countries have gotten a lot closer in recent years, largely because of shared concerns about China and its growing influence and assertiveness. But I think the U.S. policymakers know that while Vietnam is increasingly becoming a U.S. partner, it's a very, very long way from being an ally. And it, like many countries in Asia, wants to keep its options open. And Russia is a major power, and it's one way to do that. So I think they won't welcome this development, but they probably won't be overly alarmed either.
Peter Martin, Bloomberg News. Peter, great stuff. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
There you go. News, weather, and traffic 2 minutes away. When we come back, we'll update the Supreme Court. And the Ten Commandments going to be placed in every single classroom in Louisiana, kindergarten through college. I'll tell you how I feel about that next on The Mark Arum Show.
No, I want this town to be near you.
11:05 on this tremendously awesome Thursday morning. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Next half hour, Deborah's got tickets to give away to see the world's greatest a cappella band, Straight No Chaser. Speaking of music, we're going to talk to Rodney Giusto. He is one of the founding members of the Atlanta Rhythm Section. We've been playing it throughout the show today. So that's coming up next half hour. We are monitoring the Supreme Court. They've handed down, I think, three or four decisions today. Not the big one on presidential immunity. I guess tomorrow we'll hear from the judges again in the Supreme Court. Speaking of judges, this story just popped. I just saw it on AJC.com. You ready for this headline, Deborah? This is buckle up.
Okay.
Metro Atlanta judge arrested.
Okay.
At Buckhead Nightclub.
Okay.
Faces battery charge.
Cool. Ooh, what happened?
What the heck?
What was going on in that? What club was it?
So it's Douglas County Probate Judge Christina Peterson, and apparently she was already facing ethics charges. She was arrested at a Buckhead nightclub early Thursday, that's today, charged with battery, accused of striking an officer on the head and refusing to identify herself. Peterson, who's the subject of a year-long judicial misconduct investigation, was apprehended at the Red Martini Restaurant and Lounge on Peachtree Road. Now, my bar and club hopping days are so far, I've never heard of
them. Yeah, Buckhead's so different from when I used to go
there. You ever heard of the Red Martini?
No, never.
No. The Blue Oyster Club? That's where you used to go? There was a martini bar. That was on Piedmont. Anyway, Atlanta Police Department said it's still preparing an incident report. That's a judge.
So she must have been a little tipsy. She must have been a little Justin Timberlake on her way out.
I guess so. Striking. Oof. All right. So the new staff, the WSB Radio new staff, is going to be all over this. That's what a headline. Metro Atlanta judge arrested at Buckhead nightclub faces battery charge. A judge.
She must not have any cases today.
I guess so.
You're going out till 2 or something in the morning. Like it's 2 o'clock is the final call in Buckhead now.
Man, I remember those days.
It used to be 4 a.m. in our
days. Yeah, exactly. All right. Anyway, we're going to follow that story. All right. I want to talk about this story we started the show with today. It's a story that I am fascinated by and kind of annoyed by. Let's go to New Orleans. Public school teachers in Louisiana now required to post the Ten Commandments in their classroom. Governor Jeff Landry signed that bill into law yesterday, making Louisiana the first state in the union to have such a requirement. WWL's Ian Azoun reports.
If you want to respect the rule of law, you got to start from the original lawgiver, which was Moses.
Governor Jeff Landry was flanked by Louisiana lawmakers and members of the clergy when he signed the bill at a Catholic school in Lafayette. Landry said if the U.S. House of Representatives can have an image of Moses facing the House Speaker, then public schools can have the Ten Commandments posted on their walls. The bill's author, Houghton Representative Dodie Horton, praised Landry, saying this new law gives Louisiana hope.
What a great day it is for Louisiana to have a governor who supports traditional values, our families, our I just can't thank you enough, Governor.
Ian Ozan for CBS News, New Orleans.
Now, we had legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum on the show earlier, and I asked him about the legality of this, because back in 1980, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't put Ten Commandments on the walls in classrooms and schools. The Louisiana governor said yesterday, mandating that the Ten Commandments be posted in every classroom from kindergarten through college. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the Supreme Court back in 1980 say this was a no-go?
Yeah, it's 50 years old. This thing, we thought we already resolved this thing. Well, look, first of all, he's not alone. Utah, Texas, I think might be Kentucky again, are already lining up in their state legislatures. Remember, a lot of the states state are dominated by Republican legislatures. So that you saw how that played out in the Dobbs decision, because they went to work very quickly to restrict abortion access or to eliminate the right to abortion altogether in many of these.
Now, just to reiterate, I have no problem with the Ten Commandments. They came from my dude who got them down from my God. That the Jewish God handed them to Jewish Moses and said, these are the Ten Commandments. I learned about these as a young boy in Hebrew school. Deborah was in catechism.
Yeah, we learned about it in catechism.
A lot of folks, you listening right now, you learned about it in Sunday school, if not at home from your parents. I'm sure my parents brought up the Ten Commandments. The sacred tablets of Jewish Moses, from Jewish God to Jewish Moses. They're the bedrock of my religion. And I embrace them in all of their translations and what it, you know, there's been a lot of stuff over the last 5,000 years done to, but basically the headlines, I think it's a great way to live by. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't murder. Respect your parents. Don't covet Longoria's wife's salary. You know, but I don't believe they belong in classrooms. Now, the Louisiana government saying this is historic text. Well, if it's historic, then you teach it during history. Like I learned about the Greek and Roman gods during history class and the Egyptian sun god Ra. If you think it's historic, then teach it during history. You don't plaster it on every single classroom wall. Because while this was formed, this nation was formed by Christians, it's not a Christian nation. There is that separation of church and state. We had the other attorney on saying nowhere in the Constitution are the Ten Commandments referenced. I'm concerned. Again, these are my commandments. They're my tablets. They're my peoples. We brought them to the world. And I'm very glad that Christianity adopted, continued to use the Ten Commandments. I have no problem with them. But if you're a young Hindu boy or girl, or Buddhist boy or girl, or Muslim boy or girl, and is it appropriate to have, you know, the Ten Commandments, number one, thou shalt have no other God but me in various forms. But that's number one. Don't worship other God. I'm the God, man. And people might be like, oh, come on. You're being too sensitive about it. I've been in it. This is kind of an apples and oranges analogy, but I've been in a situation where I felt very uncomfortable religiously. Years ago, and I've pretty much dated Christian women, girls throughout the, you know, whatever fish is in the sea.
You don't ask that first, right?
No.
You're like, oh, you look cute.
Yeah, I grew up in a town where there was two Jewish girls.
And one was your mom?
Well, three. Three then. And none were dateable, including my mom. So I've dated, you know, my girlfriend in high school was Catholic. My girlfriend in college was Catholic. I am very familiar. I go to midnight mass, you know, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So I'm well versed. I'm very comfortable in my own skin about this. I moved to Atlanta. I started dating this girl, and she invited me over to dinner with her parents. And I didn't know. I knew she was Christian. I didn't know what branch of Christianity she was. But her parents were very religious. So we go over. It was on a Saturday night or a Sunday night. I go over for dinner. And her grandparents are there, and her parents and her sisters. And before dinner, we gather in the living room, and we all hold hands in a circle. They're like, we're going to pray before. I was like, oh, that's, you know, I was cool with it. All right, let's do it. Yeah, you know, I'm a religious cat. Let's give, I always want to give thanks for my food, right? I think, forget how lucky we are to have food so readily available
to us.
So
that's actually one of the commandments, too. It's just not the top 10. To pray before a meal.
Okay, yeah. There you go. So that's commandment 39 out of 500 that there actually are. So we gather in this circle of prayer, and I was they know I'm Jewish. Like that, I'm sure that's the first question they asked. Their daughter was like, "What's this guy's religion?" And she knew I was Jewish, and it was I don't want to say it was to the extreme of like snake handling. But it was really out there prayer. It wasn't the Lord's Prayer.
I know what you're talking about. I've been around those people too, and I mean, I am Christian. I'm Catholic, yeah. But that's extremist to me.
It wasn't. It was very I don't want to say Jesus-centric, because that's...
Is there a lot of damnation involved?
A lot of blood of Christ and non-believers shall... And I'm like looking around like, is it... What? It made me feel very... And that's the first time in my life that I've been to other people's houses where we say grace before dinner. But I was like... Oh, this isn't going to work out. They're basically trying to proselytize me before they serve me roast beef. And it felt really, really, really awkward. I know it's an apples and oranges analogy. But again, I'm going to ask this. If the roles were reversed in Louisiana, and let's just say Louisiana governor said, you know what, the Quran is historic, and we are going to require every child to carry a Quran into the classroom every day, people would go bananas. Sharia law. I don't think this is the right thing to do. And this is coming from a guy whose people received the Ten Commandments. I have nothing against the Ten Commandments. I just think putting them on every classroom wall is excessive. We'll monitor that story. We'll monitor the Supreme Court. Israel-Hamas war update comes up next on the Mark Arum Show.
It's inconceivable that in the past few months, the administration has been withholding weapons and ammunition to Israel. Israel, America's closest ally.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu raising eyebrows with those comments about arms to Israel from America. Rising tension, some substantiated claims about the U.S. from Israel led the White House to cancel a scheduled meeting with the Prime Minister. CBS News senior White House correspondent Weijia Zhang says it follows Netanyahu releasing that video claiming the U.S. is withholding military aid.
The White House says they know nothing of what Netanyahu is talking about. In fact, the exact quote from the press secretary was that we genuinely don't know. And so after this, the meeting was canceled, although officially the White House says that even though they are frustrated by that statement, that it's not exactly a reason to reschedule this meeting.
Now, we've had no developments as far as peace talks are concerned between Israel and Hamas and the partners in the region. Really, the only headline in the last 24 hours has been increased tensions between the IDF and Hezbollah, which is the Iranian-backed group in Lebanon. Apparently, Hezbollah released some drone video of Israeli settlements and Israeli military installations in northern Israel, and which is provoking a reaction from Israel. Anyway, that's the last thing we need is more conflict between the IDF and Hezbollah. But really, that's been the only headline in the Israel-Hamas war. Campaign 2024 and new poll numbers have been released in some key swing states. Fox News had a poll yesterday. This latest polling, actually, I'm polling is actually more updated. This is Emerson College polling, and The Hill finds former President Trump up 4 points over President Biden in Arizona and Georgia, 3 points up in Wisconsin and Nevada, 2 points up in Pennsylvania, and in Michigan, Trump leads by 1 point, the pair dead even in Minnesota. Now, the Fox News poll that was released last night showed nationally, not just swing states, they're now tied, which is better news for Biden because he was down 4 points a month ago. But listen, it's all going to come down to the swing states. So again, the new polling shows Trump's up 4 points here in Georgia and in Arizona, up 3 points in your home state of Wisconsin and Nevada, up 2 in Pennsylvania. In Michigan, Trump's up by 1, and the pair are dead even in Minnesota. Now, it's the results are still within the margin of error. But if despite the margin of error, you'd much rather be the person that's up 4 points than down 4 points, even if it's in the margin of error. Nationally, this is interesting. RFK is polling at 7.1%. Now, he saw a significant drop in campaign financing last month, only raised $3 million. He had raised $11 million the month before. So maybe the enthusiasm behind that third-party candidate is waiting. And again, as we reported yesterday, he is not going to be on the debate stage on June 27th here in Atlanta. He didn't meet the requirements for whatever the CNN debate was, which gives me a great chance to remind you that you can hear the debate right here live on 95.5 WSB. So that's the fresh polling data. President Trump up within the margin of error, I got to say that, but up in all of the swing states except Minnesota, where he and Biden are dead even. There's your update on campaign 2024. All right, coming up after news, weather, and traffic, I'm really excited about this. We're going to talk to Rodney Giusto, founding member of the band you're hearing right now, the Atlanta Rhythm Section. He's going to join us. He's performing in Alpharetta on Saturday. Very excited to talk to this local music legend. Social medias are active at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. And when we come back, Deborah's got tickets giveaway to see a concert as well. So hang tight. We'll be back. It's the Mark Arum Show on 95.5 WSB. Streets he walks alone. He's a stranger out of place. A number, not a face. And 11:37 on this Throwback Thursday. Welcome, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Let's give away some tickets, Deborah Green. What do we have today, my friend?
How about a pair of tickets to see Straight No Chaser, the a cappella group at the Fox Theater on December 27th.
At the Fox.
At the Fox.
Post-Christmas concert.
Perfect.
With the world's greatest a cappella band, Straight No Chaser. Let's do the ninth caller to 404-872-0750. Ninth caller to 404-872-0750 wins those tickets, courtesy of the Mark Arum Show and 95.5 WSB. I wish I had tickets to give away to see our next guest. Founding member of the Atlanta Rhythm Section, Rodney Giusto, on the Mark Arum Show. Rodney, I got to ask you, first off, take me back to 1970, the formation of the band. Where did you guys get the chutzpah, the balls, to name yourself after the city of Atlanta?
That was this, like most things, it was all Buddy Bowie. Buddy Bowie wanted to promote Atlanta. He thought that the city of Atlanta would really get behind the band if we, you know, if Atlanta Rhythm Section was part of the name. You know, the name came about, Mark, because when Buddy opened the studio, the goal was to get other artists to record there. And then when they said, what are you going to do about musicians? He said, well, I got the Atlanta Rhythm Section. We got our own rhythm section. So that's how we just got to be called Atlanta Rhythm Section. I hated the name, by the way.
Oh, really? How come?
Oh, please. I read something the other day, said it was my idea to call it the Atlanta Rhythm Section. I went, oh, no. That didn't happen.
What were the alternatives, Rodney? What didn't make it? What were some of the optional names?
Martha'sville.
Oh, okay.
Was one option, which was Terminus, I think it was thought about. Considering what the band was supposed to be in Buddy's dream, my idea for the name of the band was Gift Horse.
Ah, like, you don't know, look it in the mouth.
Exactly. So, you know, but you never know what the heck's going to happen in the future, you know?
Yeah.
But I can tell you, to be honest, I don't think any of us love the name.
That's amazing. So take me back to the spring of 70. This is at Studio One Recording Studio in Doraville. Yep. At that point in the spring of 1970, was Chicago a thing? Was Boston a thing? Were there other bands that had the city names in them already?
Well, Chicago, definitely. Boston, not yet.
Okay.
Chicago, at that point, was CTA.
Oh, okay.
Chicago Transit Authority. I don't think they'd officially switched to Chicago yet, because I remember we used to really listen to that first album a lot. But you know, I always thought that was pretty smart on their part. You know, Chicago Transit Authority, you know, references, you know, their transportation around Chicago. Yeah.
You guys could have been called
Atlanta
MARTA.
Do you know? Yeah, right. MARTA wasn't, you know, was in the talking stages.
Yeah.
But, you know, and, you know, it's so funny. You can't imagine how many times we get called the Atlantic Rhythm Section.
Atlantic, like the ocean.
All the time. Atlantic. Well. In fact, I have a, we played a place in Vegas, and they have these little mats that they put out in the restaurants, and there we are, our picture, Atlantic Rhythm Section, right next to Vicki Lawrence, who's coming, you know. So
that, well, listen, no one listening to the Mark Arum Show would ever call it the Atlantic Rhythm Section.
Dude, let me tell you something. A little humility always does you some good, you know. Don't start thinking you're so damn important.
100%. All right, so Rodney and the Atlanta Rhythm Section, or the Atlantic Rhyming Session, be performing here in town, Alpharetta, Brook Street Park, this Saturday. Proceeds from this event will help renovate the American Legion Post 201 in Alpharetta. That really cool of you guys to do that.
We're, you know, we're thrilled to be a part of it. It's always nice when you're part of a mission, let's say, you know, because a purpose. You know, I didn't know from 50 years ago, if you said Alpharetta, people go, what?
That's that? farmland up there. What's your schedule like these days? Is this super rare for you to perform, or are you guys out traveling doing gigs still?
Oh, no, we do it. Our goal, the maximum that I want to do personally, would be, you know, 50 dates a year. That's plenty. Because you got to remember, about 50 is 100. You got to get there and back.
Yeah, that's true. You that's know? Right. Round trip. That's great.
At 50 max.
Well, you can see him in Alpharetta, the Brook Street Park, June 22nd. Proceeds helping renovate the American Legion Post 201 in Alpharetta. You know, I grew up in Connecticut, but I was an early adopter, an early fan of your music. What I love is, like, four notes in, I'm like, oh, that's the Atlanta Rhythm Section. You guys had such a unique sound. What was the genesis of that uniqueness? Where did it come from?
You know, it's very hard to define because we are a guitar-centric band. We're two wonderful guitarists. But if you listen to the records, the sound is really piano-centric. If you listen to Alien, So Into You, you know, when you hear the first chord for Hard Day's Night, you know it's going to be a Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
You just listen to the first note played on So Into You, and you know it's Atlanta Rhythm Section.
That's it, yeah.
You know, and there's no question between, especially Barry and JR, I mean, those two guys were just brilliant.
Ronnie, you know, I got to ask you a question. So you guys had the hits, you had the album sales, but the music, the tunes are so recognizable. It's so amazing. Were you ever approached by like Madison Avenue and say, hey, can we use So Into You or Imaginary Lover in commercial endeavors? Did you guys ever lend your music and lyrics to?
My recollection is, and I wasn't part of the band at the time, but I think they did something with Dr. Pepper once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but it's funny you say that because I watch television, I see little snippets of bands' music, and I'm going, man, I wish they'd find something of ours to use, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It gets you work and gets you more money for work.
Yeah, listen, I'm trying to take care of you, Rodney. I want to get some money in your pocket.
Yeah, keep going. Don't stop.
That being said, all right, so let's fast forward to the music business in 2024. It might just be me. I'm getting older, but I'm like, the new music today is just meh. Am I wrong? Are you a fan of new music, new musicians, new stuff coming out?
Yes and no. The musicality has been taken out. Most of the songs, unless they're ironically, you know, country songs,
yeah,
they don't have much to say. You know, I saw a thing the other day about Charlie Parker, who was he changed jazz saxophone playing for the world. And he used to go into places like in New York City, and he'd go to a jukebox and he'd play country music. And all the jazz music, what the heck are you doing? what did you do with the country music? He says, it's the stories, man. It's the stories. Yeah. You know, so we like to think that our songs have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, there's some sort of connection to something.
Rodney, it's such a pleasure. I can't wait to hear you guys this weekend. Atlanta Rhythm Section, Atlanta and Alpharetta at the Brook Street Park on June 22nd. And great cause, too. All the proceeds from the event are going to help renovate the American Legion Post 201 in Alpharetta. Rodney, we got to get you in studio sometime, man. I'd love to hang out.
I'm ready, man.
Fantastic. I'll see you Saturday, Rodney. Appreciate it, buddy.
Looking forward to it.
I'm excited. I've never seen them live in concert. So this is going to be, I think you're surprised, Deborah, as our musical correspondent.
Just living here and on these shows that they've done. That's
yeah,
all.
But I mean, growing up in Connecticut, I knew all about them. They were always on the radio. So I'm excited this Saturday. Congrats to John in Dallas, winner of a pair of tickets to see the amazing, it's not the Atlanta Rhythm Section, but fantastic a cappella band, Straight No Chaser. December 27th at the Fabulous Fox Theater, courtesy of Mark Arum Show and WSB Radio. Again, thanks to John in Dallas. One segment to go. We'll be back on 95.5 WSB. Honor, a couple of big stories here on 95.5 WSB, including a Metro Atlanta judge arrested at a Buckhead nightclub this morning. She faces battery charges. We'll have an update on that and the expanded new news. Supreme Court, some decisions were handed down today, but not the big one we're all waiting for involving presidential immunity. So a couple of big stories we're following here. Last week or so, Deborah, who's been the most popular man at WSB Radio?
To most popular man?
I'll give you a hint.
Longo?
Yeah, Andrew Longoria, the Blueberry King.
Oh, yeah,
as he's called.
They're fantastic.
He just King. Keeps coming in with bags and bags of blueberries. Is, you know, a gardener expert. He's going to be soon on Green and Growing.
He's going to fill in when Ashley's gone.
Well, Ashley's going to do a blueberry segment with this guy, the Blueberry King. You might like this story. I love this story because it involves history. But Longoria, you're going to love it because it involves fruit. Perfectly preserved, centuries-old cherries were unearthed at George Washington's home in Mount Vernon. Centuries-old cherries.
Dozens of century-old, impeccably preserved cherries and berries from the cellar of George Washington's Mount Vernon estate in Northern Virginia have been discovered during an archaeological dig. Whole cherries with pits were found in some of the bottles. Other bottles hold what appears to be gooseberries or currants. Officials say that the discovery of so much perfectly preserved food from more than 250 years ago is essentially unprecedented. Mount Vernon is partnering with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to conduct DNA testing on the fruit. They are also examining more than 50 cherry pits to see if any of them can be planted. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
You think they're edible still?
Is that from the tree he cut down?
Yeah, the cherry tree. I cannot tell a lie.
Apparently, well, that's a fake thing.
Yeah, of course. I'm so fascinated by this story. This is Jason Burrows. He's Mount Vernon's principal archaeologist.
Finding what is essentially fresh fruit 250 years later is pretty spectacular. All the stars sort of have to align in the right manner for that to happen. And the historical and cultural context of this, the reason why they're there, they were put in these storage pits in the cellar, and then they were paved over with a brick floor shortly after. And so they sat until 2024.
Would you try them? Would you try
Would
the,
I try
a
them?
George Washington cherry?
Maybe not.
I totally get this story. In the town I grew up, every one of my friends, Italian's grandfather, made their own alcoholic cherries in the basement. They would take cherries and just soak them in some sort of alcohol, and the cherries would turn white. And the liquid would turn red. And if you were in high school and you didn't have a fake ID, you just went to Enzo's grandpa's basement and you grabbed a handful of these cherry bombs and you get wasted on them. I think that's fascinating.
I wonder if you immediately open it, they just go bad. Like they get hit.
Maybe.
Yeah, the air hits them and it's just.
I can't even keep strawberries for a week in my house.
Right.
That's all right. So there you go. Bury some blueberries.
I'm gonna bury them. 250 years from now.
In your basement. There you go. Quick update. Another reason why I'm not going to be an astronaut, Deborah. Astronauts on the space station now stuck in space.
For at least another week, they're saying. So they're stuck at the ISS.
Yeah, the space station.
Yeah, so the Boeing Starliner right there. You're already worried when it says Boeing, right? They sent them up there thinking, you're only going to be up there for about a week. We'll have you back. And they've just had problems, mechanical problems, technical problems, trying to get them back down. There's helium leaks. There's thruster issues. So they're hoping, no promises, but hoping they'll be down next week. And they're saying, oh, the astronauts don't mind. They love being up there.
Well, you can go one of two ways. If it was me, I get mad if I'm stuck on the tarmac after I land for an hour waiting for a gate. That, to me, is so frustrating. I would be losing my mind if I had to be stuck in space for another week. But the astronauts are probably loving it. They're like, we get an extra week up here. This is awesome.
I guess they're at ISS, so that makes it a little bit better. Because, well, they're not like in a capsule or something just floating around. They're actually somewhere where there's stuff to do, kind of.
Yeah, they're probably loving it. I would be freaking out. Get me home. I got to get out of here. I want solid food again.
Yeah, so they're hoping to bring him back Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Hoping. Yeah, next Tuesday.
All right, good. Godspeed. I'm never going to be an astronaut.
Longoria's fact of the day.
All right, it's National Ice Cream Soda Day, and ice cream soda was created unintentionally by the coming together of ice cream and soda. It is believed that Robert Greene, maybe a relative of yours, Deborah, was trying to prepare
Uncle
chilled
Bobby.
Yeah, soda at a Philadelphia fair, but ran out of ice shavings. He came up with the idea of adding ice cream to the soda to make it cool.
National Ice Cream Soda Day.
Yeah.
Is the most famous one has got to be the root beer float, right? That is
the number one.
And then Coke float maybe after that?
Sure. Yeah. I haven't had an ice cream or Coke float or any of those ice cream sodas in a long time.
I made a bourbon root beer float last year.
I bet that was phenomenal.
No Dr. Pepper floats?
I have to try that.
They have the Dr. Pepper milkshake.
Yeah, at Whataburger.
At Whataburger, which I highly recommend. The burgers are better at Culver's, though. But they don't have the Dr. Peck of Pepper. Why do I keep saying...
And now, are you guys ready for the
Pick a Peck of Pickled Peppers. All right, stars of the show. Where's my bell? All right, Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News legal analyst, joined us talking about what's going on in Louisiana with the Ten Commandments and the Supreme Court. Another attorney. We had two lawyers on today. Andrew Seidel joined us to talk about Louisiana. We had Brad Garrett on, the cell phone ban, not only here in Marietta, but in Los Angeles. He gets a star of the show, as does Peter Greenberg, travel expert for CBS Radio News. Peter's been to North Korea twice, two times, and he says don't go to Russia. He'd prefer you go to North Korea than Russia. That's coming from his mouth, not me. So he gets a star of the show, as does Rodney Giusto, founding member from Atlanta Rhythm Section. Let's give Sabrina Cupid one. She's back.
Yay!
She's a Gracie Award winner. Congratulations, Sabrina.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I'm so glad to have you back, and you get a star of the show. Am I forgetting anyone, Deborah? I think...
George Washington's Cherries.
Oh, Bloomberg.
Peter Martin
from Bloomberg. I love having him on. With that accent, it's just automatic credibility. Talking about U.S. spies in China. Love that stuff. All right, tomorrow's Friday. We got Bill Crane going to come in to talk some politics. Deborah's got more tickets to give away. And, of course, we'll update all the top local stories for you right here. The conversation will continue on social media at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. Stay safe. Have a great Thursday, Atlanta. The world he left behind not so long.
Said he's going back to a simpler place and time. He takes that ride, oh, you see him right by his side.
Guests of the Mark Guerin Show stay at the All Suite Omni Hotel, located in the heart of Chicago's magnificent mind.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.